This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by the Madrone Tap House in Old Town Eureka. Madrone has wood fire pizzas, salads, wraps, wings, and a rotating selection of local brews. Madrone is a family-owned business and sources local, organic, and non-GMO products whenever possible. What could be more Humboldt than that? Madrone has outdoor seating and offers delivery, so check them out Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m. at 421 3rd Street in Old Town, or order by calling 273-5129 or online at madronetaphouse.com.
It's Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost's now 100% vaccinated podcast, coming to you live, recorded from Old Town Eureka. My name is Andrew Goff.
And I'm Stephanie McGarry. Yes, it's true. I went and got my first dose.
You got poked.
Vaccine. Yeah. I got poked in my arm. Yeah. Arms feel a little sore.
Yeah.
But I'm good.
Well, are you ready now with your vaccine for summer to befall us?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? I've been ready. But yes, I'm excited about the possibility of being able to convene with other humans.
Yeah. Maybe some river days in your future.
Oh, definitely. That's always.
Oh, my God.
Always. I mean, even during the pandemic, I was still going to the river.
You know. And when you go to the river, you're going to need some cold, tasty beverages, which is how I'm savvily transitioning into this week on the show. We have Linda Cooley, who is the COO of Mad River Brewery. You may remember back in, I believe it was October of 2019, roughly 300 years ago, that the Yurok tribe bought Mad River Brewery, which was a big move, very beloved Humboldt County institution. So I think, people, it raised some eyebrows, but I think people were mostly excited. But we're going to talk to her about that transition this last year, COVID. What else? What else did we talk about?
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about their new river friendly beverage, their hard seltzer.
Yeah. But we're also going to, talk about what this means for the Yurok tribe, what it means to have a tribally owned brewery and some of the stigma they've had to face as a result, and how they have found a way to tell the story of the tribe through this acquisition. So I think it's a pretty good chat. Let's get her in here. Linda Cooley.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
What are you? Is this a home office or are you at the brewery right now?
So I'm at the brewery. I'm on the brewing side. We've split our offices farther apart. So we've got creative. I'm actually in our old files closet that made the brightest, most perfect office. So yeah.
And a great podcast studio.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
We'll just start with this. Like, what's going on at the brewery today? Like, what does your day look like?
So today, after talking with you guys, I am working on a launch of a new beer that we have coming out. Okay. We're going to have information coming out in a couple weeks, and it's following our tribal care and passion of things that we're passionate about, like Undammed. It's going to be similar, and it's in a partnership with a major partner in California, not only to tribes, but to people who love the outdoors. So I'm very excited about that. Mm-hmm. And our tap room is really busy. We have three big parties coming in. We have new specials on the menu, and we've extended our hours. So I'll be checking in on that. And we're brewing more seltzer because we sold out. So it's a busy day.
Yeah.
Woo!
I feel like this last week was the first really, or I felt the warmth of the sun, and I thought, it seems like going out to Blue Lake and enjoying a beer in the tap room is going to be very appealing to a lot of people here in the coming weeks and months.
It's so nice, and everyone just wants to see each other and laugh and have that connection again. And we're going to open our parking lot back up. And now that we're in the orange tier and we have 50% inside, it kind of doesn't make a difference because everyone that comes here loves sitting outside and bringing their pets. Yeah. So it's been really nice to see familiar faces and connect with people again and feel safe about it. It's been really wonderful. Blue Lake's beautiful.
And then you mentioned launching a new beer, but you did not reveal what that new beer is. Are you playing that close to the chest for the moment, or can you tell us a little bit about that?
I am. I can tell you that it's an IPA, and it's something everyone's familiar with. There's been some changes, and the packaging, all of our packaging going forward, is delivering a message to things that are important to not just your art people, but to us as people that love nature and our area. So I'm super excited.
Okay. But you're not going to tell us the name?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
All right. Well, we want to get our beer exclusive here. Yeah. But that's cool. It's good that you told us a little something to be excited about.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we'll get into all things Mad River, but I think we need to start with a little disclaimer of sorts, because while I somehow have not spoken to you in regards to any of your local professional pursuits over the years, we do kind of go way back, which you reminded me about. We grew up, you and I grew up on the same street in Arcata, and when we were chatting back and forth trying to set this up, you know, you mentioned that you used to babysit me, and I accepted that, but then I went back and thought about it, and I'm like, are you that much older than me? How can you be? I don't think you are, right?
No, oh, I was the least wild that everyone knew of. I think you guys are only a couple years behind me, but I was entrusted that we wouldn't burn the house down and we wouldn't run away. And we still had a great time. But
so you were just the most responsible kid on the
I was the most responsible.
And that doesn't surprise me that you're more responsible than Goff for some reason.
So maybe we're the same age, and they just said, like, no, this we'll leave it in Linda's hands. And
we're gonna leave it in her hands. Yeah. And I think we all stayed in the yard too. And I don't know if you remember, but we would have fairs in our yards and charge people to come play. Do you remember this? We would literally have a hula hoop hanging, and they would throw balls in the hula hoop, and we would charge them, and they would win prizes like cookies and pies, whatever I got from my grandma's house. It was so much fun.
Wow.
Because that was your grandma that lived, I think, right next door to me.
Yes.
On Hager. Yep. I apologize to Stephanie, who has to deal with us going down memory lane here.
No, I love it. I'm interested in this. It seems like you were a businesswoman from the start.
really, I was.
You were not only babysitting at a very young age, but then figuring out a way to double down on the business of that and hold fairs.
We had to have money for candy at Greenview Market. That was a necessity. Yeah. There was a whole clan of us on, hey, we're the Hager Avenue gang, and we needed candy money. So we were hustling every way possible.
Yeah, I used to do some similar things myself. Yep, candy money.
Greenview Market, which Josh Ingram's father owned. And you paid for the candy. I think we just kind of like assumed that because it was Josh's dad's store that we could take some.
That's probably accurate.
So we'll get to all things Mad River in a second, but something we like to do on this show is we like to get people's humble history. So if you could like take us from being a kid on Hager Avenue up through the years, you know, through your to your ascension to COO of Mad River.
Yeah, I grew up in Humboldt County. Not only do I have family here in town in Arcata, but I have family from our reservation up in Wichpet, where I lived half and half for most of the time. So I went to school in Arcata up until I was a sophomore, and then I moved to Wichpet full time. I graduated Hoopa High, I went to CR, and then I went to Humboldt State. I worked for mostly Anheuser-Busch, whether it was a distributor or the company directly, up until I was a VP of Eel River Brewery. I learned a ton. I got so much more experience than I did before that. After that, I helped open our hotel casino in Klamath.
Yeah.
I then moved to Texas and now I'm back and it's so exciting. And I am part of our tribal economic structure and development and brewery. So it's exciting to be back with my people, both in Arcata and Wichita. I'm so lucky because I have Arcata family that are just as much family. And then I have my Wichita Downriver family. So I'm lucky. Yeah.
So you graduated from HSU and then immediately mm-hmm. got the job at Anheuser-Busch?
I started at the Budweiser distributor locally on my 21st birthday before I graduated, literally okay. on my 21st birthday. Yeah. My dad built the Fairfield Brewery and I had always had a connection to Budweiser specifically. And it just was the right fit.
Yeah. And what all did you do in their universe?
I have done a little bit of everything. I okay. was the secretary. I was the bud girl. I was a salesman. I was a sales manager. I did marketing. Mm. I did special accounts. And then yeah. I helped with labels for a little bit.
Okay. Well, so that was a good mm-hmm. boot camp yeah. for where you find yourself now.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. and then you mentioned that you spent some time at Eel River Brewery. Was that down mm-hmm. in Scotia?
In Scotia, yeah.
In those years, yeah.
Yeah, it sure was. At the time, they were really looking at expanding their distribution, and I had a lot of experience with distribution with the bigger houses, as opposed to small distributors, which are great. But sometimes when you're looking at changing your labels and you're changing your plan, you need to go with more of the mainstream planning, maybe not even a mainstream distributor, but what does that look like? And what are people looking for when they're looking at the beer on your shelf? So yeah. it was really exciting to help them reinvent what that beer looks like today.
Yeah. And I'd say this, like, why beer? I mean, is there a mm-hmm. reason, like, is there a reason that you gravitated? I mean, you say your dad worked in that mm-hmm. realm, but Blaine, was this always mm-hmm. like, I want to work in beer because I like beer, or the there's something about it that appeals to you?
No, I never wanted to work in beer. I wanted to be a social worker or an artist. I wanted to help people. And son of a gun, I'm the best at beer. And also it's an outlet for art. I'm big into art and I yeah. love people. And it ended up being the beer business is the most family-friendly business I've ever been around. And I call them my beer family because they are. And yeah. really, it's just connecting people together. And if you take away the fact that it's alcohol, it's such a social and community yeah. aspect where you're able to help businesses. And I love it. I've tried to get away from it and it just sucks me back in. And at this point I accept it and I love it. And I hope that I can spread the positive message of the industry as opposed for it just looking like we are getting people to drink alcohol, because that's not it entirely at all.
Oh no. I think that here in Humboldt too, we have a very strong beer culture and mm-hmm. the yeah. drinkers of beer.
And a positive care, one.
Yeah. Yeah. And they care about more than, you know, just getting loaded off of beer. It's a whole yeah. experience, you know, it's about the flavor. It's about where it came from. I mean, you know, I'm sure I don't actually know that much about it, but I used to love drinking beer as well.
Yeah. You're spot on. I mean, beer yeah. is such an art. Really, brewing beer is an art form. And I think especially here, it's easy to take for granted because we have so many wonderful local breweries. Every time I'm seen drinking another beer, they're like, oh, you don't drink your own? No, I love beer. I love our beer, but I also love all these other beers. And it's such a craft. And it's a time for us to all come together and talk about what we're doing, and not even just making it, it's the art and the labels and the food that goes with it. It's a magical yeah. magical yeah. thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say I've you know, I've paid close attention to our local breweries, and when I say that I mean I drink their beers, I've never gotten like a whiff of competitiveness, or at least, you know, not publicly. I'm sure y'all are competitive mm-hmm. in trying to make each other produce the best product and provide the best experience for your customers. But there really is a camaraderie, it seems, by mm-hmm. between all the local breweries that has always seemed like an encouraging aspect of that local beer culture that Steph mentioned.
I think not just local, but also craft beer, especially at a certain level. Locally, I know that if anyone needs help or if we need help, we reach out to each other, especially during the pandemic. We've had some really hard times and we've had to rely on each other. When you get into the bigger boys, when I worked for Anheuser-Busch now, it was a straight on war with Coors every single day of my life. Like I prep for battle, but in the craft beer business, we're sharing notes and we're helping each other. It's such a family-oriented experience. It's really the only way I can explain it. And especially during the pandemic, we've had social media platforms for breweries to help each other out and talk about things that we didn't necessarily do before. So it's been really interesting. It's such a community-based business.
Yeah. And like you said, Goff, I was going to say, you know, we've also had several brewery owners and distillery owners on this podcast now. And that is definitely one of the things that they all say. They all give lots of shout outs to other local products, and they definitely drink other people's beer a lot or other people's alcohol a lot. And they don't want to just like brag about their own thing. And it's cool to see that, like you said, especially during this pandemic, how local businesses have really been trying to mm-hmm. help each other out. You know, we should talk a little bit about your journey with becoming COO of Mad River. And it was about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. I think, that the Yurok Tribe announced acquiring Mad River Brewery. Could you just kind of, you know, walk us through how mm-hmm. that came to be? Was this something that the tribe had been interested in for a while, or?
Yeah, so I was in Klamath at the visitor center, and I had just moved home. Literally, I think was here a month and a half. And I got a call from a mutual friend of the old board, and they said, they heard that you're home now, and they feel like the Yurok tribe can take Mad River into a better direction and a bigger platform than they can. I literally laughed and said, "You're crazy. There's such a weird dynamic and an underlying message about natives and alcohol. And it's across the board. It's something we never want to talk about." I laughed and said, "You're crazy." And I took it to my leadership and I said, "Hey, I just got this call. It's crazy. It's wild." And we started pursuing it. We had a bigger conversation and looked at the dynamic. And we looked past the part that was alcohol. And we looked at the part that here's an opportunity to keep a beautiful company going that has been in business for 30 years. This is a staple to Humble. It's a staple to craft beer. It's also an opportunity to get our own membership, looking at different options in your career and your life. We all cannot work in forestry and fisheries. That's not all of our realms. It wasn't my realm. I'm horrible at those things. And it was also a way to get messaging out there that there are tribal people out here. And we're still here. You don't see that in major supermarkets. You don't go in a Target and see a beer that has a tribal design on it that's real. Also, we were looking at the fact that casinos are the biggest sellers of beer in California. So we already are selling the most beer in California, but we're not making the money off of that. We're not making the product that's being sold out there. So we looked at it as a whole, and then we thought, hey, one day we can grow our own hops. It doesn't stop there, right? And we can help other tribes get into this. So it started there, and it's been a heck of a journey, and also purchasing a business trip before pandemic hits. It's been a blessing and a curse all at the same time.
Sure. Yeah. We were definitely going to talk about that more.
Yeah. Too. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Andrew, so this is, you know, this was a unique move that y'all made, I think, to have a tribal entity buy a beloved, well-established brand. Like, I think when it happened, you know, a lot of people were excited about it and maybe what it symbolizes, but there's a risk too, right? You have to run the business. There are customers who've grown attached to the brand. You know, how have you navigated those waters between, you know, wanting to take this brewery in directions that you think are important, that you believe in, while still carrying on, you know, the MRB traditions?
That's been a very fine line to walk. One of the biggest things that were key is having our staff stay. So everyone on the brew side, nothing has changed. They're all still here. And one of the things that's important to me, one of my values, is having our team having a voice in what we're doing. And I've spent a lot of time asking local customers that come in here often and our own team, what have you seen? What would you change? What have you liked? What did you dislike? Our core brands are always going to stay our core brands. You've seen some label changes. Those recipes are not changing. And what I found is there's a few people that maybe don't like the native messaging or the basket design you see on the bottle. But for the most part, people are thankful that it stayed and it didn't go out of business. They're thankful that they can come in and still get Steelhead or Jamaica or Slamming Salmon, and it's still here. Really listening to our own team first and what worked and what didn't was the key to that element. And then having them buy in on what our vision or understanding what the vision is, it's not to change it. It's really to get it in the hands of people who haven't touched it and haven't felt it. And I don't think that the tribal messaging is different at all from what the brewery intended to do. We all love the environment here. All of this beer was already named after something natural. And we just want to take it to that next level and explain really what it means and why it's here.
Yeah, you mentioned people being opposed to the native messaging. I can't imagine what that would be. What does that opposition look like?
I've definitely had a few comments about I'm trying to word this correctly, where it's not just about who owns the brewery or who's running it. I've had comments of all lives matter. It's about the beer, not about the people, which I agree on all those platforms. Yeah. However, it's okay to be proud of being your OC. And also, I'm even more proud that we're one of the first tribal breweries in history.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Like, how many other examples are there of tribes owning breweries?
Yeah, so there's actually not that many. And there's a difference between a native owning a brewery and a tribally affiliated. So we have the Iraq Agricultural Corporation that owns the brewery. And there's only a handful in the United States of tribes. And there's even less than that have their beer distributed. There's some that make beer for their property or their casino. Ours you can find in Safeway, Target, Costco, Walmart. So it's really about expanding that out. And I'm very proud of that. And not just because I'm Iraq, but when I started in the beer business as a female, there was a limit of what you could do. And there is an expectation of what you should do. And as a female native, I never thought that I would be able to have our own messaging out there. And it's just a proud day all around. It's a proud time.
I'd say obviously one of the biggest outward facing changes that you all have made has been in the labels, which, you know, now incorporate, I think it's a Yurok design. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a basket design.
Okay. Yeah. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what that is and what it symbolizes and how that came to be?
Mm-hmm. With a design that you'll see on all of our beers, it's a staple outside of the artwork changing as a sturgeon design. It is a basket design. Our baskets design are something that's protected that we have to get permission to use from our culture committee. So the amount of designs that I can use are very limited. The words I can use are very limited. Our culture is something we take seriously, and most of it doesn't belong on a beer can, and I completely agree with that. So finding the balance of announcing that we are a tribally owned brewery without bringing that shame or disrespect to our culture it's a fine line, and it's kind of perfect in the fact that we didn't want to change Steelhead in Jamaica all that much. It was right the way it was, but our logo brings the sturgeon design in everything we do. And then our new line, our seltzers, also dive deeper into our beliefs and our fights, and not just Yurok, but in Indian country in general.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you were talking a little bit earlier too about really emphasizing bringing the celebration of the natural area into the labeling as well, and which is something kind of, like you said, Mad River already did, but you definitely have done that with some new products too, or at least the one big new product that I know about you releasing kind of recently is Undammed, the hard seltzer water, which seems to be a bit of a trend in alcoholic beverages these days. I know that can I just start by saying, what's with that?
Every brewery needs a hard seltzer now.
When did this become a thing? And apparently people love the hell out of it. You just said earlier that you were selling out of it, you're brewing more. People are really loving this stuff?
Yeah, so I think we go through these fads, right? We had hard lemonade when I was going to Club West, right? At 1920. Yes. And then we had the cider days, which didn't last as long. They're still there, but they were hot and heavy. And the trend now and for the next 4 to 5 years is seltzer, and it's not going anywhere. And when you see the big guys do it, like Bud Light and Corona and Coors, and of course White Claw's just decided to make its own gajillion dollar company, right?
White Claw is like a cultural phenomenon now. It's like
it's a Pabst Blue Ribbon type of situation. It's just like this trendy hip thing.
It kind of feels like one of those things. It's like, you know, Band-Aid, Kleenex, White Claw, you know, it's like one of those like brands that
has become synonymous with the product. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
It will be interesting to see what they do when the seltzer trends over. I hope they keep with it. But the seltzer, so we, last summer I was on the river, like I am every weekend in the summer. And sometimes you have so many beers and you're full. I'm not trying to have that look at the river. We started drinking Clarity, and of course I have a special place in my heart for Eel River, but Clarity was actually really delicious. It didn't have a bad aftertaste. The Meyer Lemon Clarity was freaking amazing. And I talked to our brewer, Dave, and I was like, hey, we need a seltzer. This is no joke, but I don't want a regular seltzer. I want like a man seltzer where we all can carry the seltzer and not feel shamed in the skinny can with this crazy flavor. Like, these men are hiding the fact that they're buying 12 packs of White Claw. I know what's in that bag, but you're too ashamed to carry it. We need to figure this out.
I know the social pressure. Yeah. I can relate.
You can't be seen carrying a White Claw. So we talked about it, and we talked about flavors, and I was like, you know, we need a chill flavor, like a spa water. And cucumber was just like an easy target for that. And we tested some things, and Dave said, you know what? We're going to have to do this differently. We're going to brew it like beer, because that's who we are. We're not seltzer makers. We're not cider makers. We make beer. So our seltzer is actually hopped, and the hops that we use have the mint flavor, which you taste in cucumber mint, and it's not a skinny can. I can't do that. And also I'm thirsty, and an adult, a 12-ounce can might not be enough.
Shots fired.
Ours is a 16-ounce can, and the label is neither masculine or feminine, and it's brewed like beer. It's refreshing. It doesn't have that bad aftertaste. And the next flavor we're going to do is Huckleberry. So I'm super excited about that.
That's awesome. When you say that about the can, I actually had commented on that right right before this, I was looking and saying, oh, these cans look like beer cans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And most of the other hard seltzers look like seltzer water cans, which I was always thinking seemed like actually a little bit of a bad idea. I'm like, this seems like this is going to get in the hands of kids and like, somebody is going to come thinking it's just a flavored sparkly water.
And it looks funky in my mind. I would walk by it and I'm like, they're all skinny white cans. They're all skinny white cans. They're all looking the same. And when we decided that it was going to be different, I have always grown up on the Klamath River, and the need for the fight for our water and our fish, not just on the Klamath, but in general, has been something very emotional, traumatic, and important for us to fight for. And we're talking about how our seltzers are so different. And I was like, gosh, you know, we need a demand release. We have to demand release from this ordinary category of all these other seltzers. And it became apparent that it needed to be undammed, where we are undamming this category and we're not going to fall in suit. We're going to create our own. We're brewing it like beer because that's what we do. And I'm going to follow our tribal identity and bring awareness to the fact that water is life, and that's what's in these cans. And at the same time, after we came up with the label, it got announced that our dams are coming down, and it's been over a 20-year fight. So it's just been a really wonderful thing. And with our product, after we hit profitability, which will be a little bit because we just rolled it out, we're going to be donating a portion to the recovery of the rivers, and it's going to be a long fight. So it's exciting.
Oh, wait, yeah. So I was going to ask about that, about the story behind the undammed. Mm-hmm. And I assumed that it was prompted by the announcement of the planned undamming of the Klamath River. It was just a little bit before it ended up kind of being at the same time.
Yeah, it was one of those things when we found out the news, we're like, oh my gosh, we just named this seltzer undammed. It's so meant to be.
Yeah.
That's so pretty cool. Yeah, one of my heroes, Ewok Troy Fletcher, he really brought the fight of these rivers. He was a close friend. And in my history, I've always been involved in alcohol. And I've not been ashamed of it, but it was never anything I felt like I could be proud of. And he was someone always on my corner saying, you're going to do good things. Don't be ashamed of what you're doing. And when we named this, he was just so heavy on my heart. And the trauma we went through of seeing all those salmon and the thought of, you know what, we can be who we are and I can be a proud native and still sell beer and make it. And Undammed is really like the beginning of that. And this year at the Craft Brewers Conference, we're actually going to speak on it on the first time on diversity and inclusion in this business. And I plan on doing that with every beverage we have after this. So it's exciting.
Yeah. So you've mentioned this a few times, and I thought I'd give you opportunity to talk a little bit more about it, because I think it is interesting, because when there were discussions about making this deal, you've mentioned, you know, the stigma about alcohol and Native communities being something that may have, you know, inhibited the decision to buy this. You know, like, you talk a little bit about those conversations and how you ultimately, you know, overcame that to make the decision to move in this direction.
Yeah, I think that for sure the biggest person that was concerned about it outside of a few leadership was myself, because my whole life I've been working in the beer business in my adult life, and I've had people respond positively and I've had people respond negatively. Like, how are you doing? Why aren't you doing something more important? Why aren't you helping people? It's a big conversation that nobody ever has on, oh, it's a drunk Indian. And literally that's the phrase. It still comes out of a lot of people's mouths. And the reality is that our brewery isn't targeting our own people. It's going off of out in the world, and we're not even on the reservation. And this brewery is not going to the reservation. It's in Blue Lake. I think too, putting the power in your own hands of saying, I can make beer and I can drink it and I can be responsible about it. And it's time we start having those conversations. The rights of natives and us even being able to buy alcohol have been taken away. So for us to be able to have a brewery and send it to other native casinos and sell it, it's an act of sovereignty. This is us expanding our portfolio and not depending on others. We're a sovereign nation and we're sovereign people. And we need to take the power back in that negative connotation. And it's still going to be out there and people are still going to say it. But I think us showing them that we can bring positivity to this, a good example is Undammed and our new beer that's coming out. We can send out positive messaging in this alcohol. So I'm excited.
Go ahead, Steph.
Oh, no, I was just going to say too, though, I mean, have you seen, have a lot of people had in the tribe had a positive response to this? I mean, are they with you on this idea of maybe not just building your, you know, business portfolio, but also removing the stigma a little bit, that maybe it's time to branch out in this way?
I think it's a mixed combination. And I don't blame anyone who, when they hear it, they pause and they show concern, because that's something that sounds like it could go sideways pretty fast, right? There's definitely people out there that are still skeptical. And there are people who have come here and experienced it and they're supporters. I think when you come to the brewery itself, the tap room, it's all families. This is a family environment, as we are as Yurok people. Everything is, we do it with each other. We are village people. And the brewery is very much like its own little village of kids and dogs and families.
Yeah.
And then when they're seeing the messaging that we're putting out on our labels, I think we're starting to chip away at the negative condensation of it.
Yeah, just the fact that you're able to, you know, tell the story of the tribe a little bit, like even through, you know, something as Undammed, like as you mentioned, you know, the fight to you know, kind of restore the Klamath has kind of defined the Yurok struggle for so many years now, and this in some ways feels like a celebration, right? A celebration of that struggle and ultimate victory over that.
Yeah, I feel like you're gonna make me cry. It's such a celebration, but also we have our own certification, Yurok Country, and on our cans is our own certification, Yurok Country certified. And I got to walk into Safeway the other day and I saw the word Yurok in Safeway. I never in my whole entire life thought that that would be possible. I never thought that my skill would help my tribe. I never thought my skill, which at the time I thought was the worst, would be able to help Indian country. And here we are as Native people seeing our tribe's name in these big chain stores. And it's unbelievable, even outside of the fact that it's beer. You can't argue with the fact that that's a win and we're getting somewhere. It's taken all this time, but we're getting attention and we're bringing it forward and we can do good things with it. So it's a win across the board for all of Indian country.
Yeah. That's really cool. So, I mean, I guess, you know, looking forward, you know, how do you ensure that Mad River, you know, is successful and stays profitable, and how do you grow it? You know, I noticed something on your page about, you know, some sort of deal with Anheuser-Busch. Am I understanding that right? Mm-hmm. Is that a distribution deal, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we have a few things going on. We're really fortunate. We have some friends throughout Indian country. One of our biggest partnerships that we shared was with San Manuel Casino. They have the largest casino in California, and they have historically helped and been partners with the Yurok tribe for a long time. With them, they sell as much beer as Caesar's Palace in Vegas.
Okay.
So we have people like that selling our beer, and we have the National Indian Gaming Association teaming up with us. And then with my roots that I am extremely loyal to, I am changing our distributors around into the bigger houses, and they are helping us get it out there. When we're looking at delivering these big messages, we need big partners in helping us getting there. And with my history with Anheuser-Busch and all of our Budweiser distributors, I know that our product is in no better hands, and I'm glad to see that they want to help us and get the message. It's a double win for them as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Where do you expand to, you know, beyond what you've already said, you're in some of these big stores? Like what does does expansion look like for Mad River?
Yeah, so I think really getting our basic footprint back into the realm of California. I think that a lot of younger people don't know about Mad River. My age still does, but younger than me, it fades off because Mad River was popular a while ago, and getting that core brand back in there. And now that we're coming out of this pandemic and bars are opening back up, just being really consistent. I have newer tap handles coming out that has the Sturgeon design and Mad River on it and the word Yurok, getting it out there. Inevitably, we're going to possibly have a second brewery. I see Southern California, Arizona, and New Mexico being big areas for us, as Washington and Oregon. And I'm working on hopefully creating our own category in beer for tribal brands or native brands, and creating a Native Craft Brewers Association. So there's more to come, and we're really excited. It's really just about having other options out there and getting this great beer out there.
You mentioned that you were one of the few tribally owned breweries. What are some of the other big names out there that people might know?
So there's Rincon. Rincon's the only tribally one I know, tribal, not native. That's really pushing out beer. I went to Bow and Arrow in New Mexico, that's owned by two native females, delicious beer. But tribally, I think big wise, it's only Rincon. And we're going there in June, and I'm so excited because, as opposed to, it's like the craft beer industry, I don't want you to fail, I want you to succeed, because it's all of our it's all of our success. And again, at the Craft Brewers Conference this year, we're having a whole category on diversity and inclusion, and I get to speak on stewardship and how we can combine that in this package and deliver that message. There's a lot of exciting things.
So you touched a little bit on this earlier when we were talking about the Yurok tribe acquiring Mad River Brewery, that not very long after that happened, we were hit by a global pandemic, and you know, who could have expected that?
Surprise.
So I mean, I thought, could you tell us a little bit about how that sort of changed operations or plans, you know, at that time? Of course, we've seen that, you know, like with other restaurants and breweries, just the dining has had to open and close, you know, having people in person and there, but it may be some other ways that you were impacted by this.
It's been crazy. Oh my goodness. You buy a business and you pre-plan, and we had all these big sales happening and the pandemic hits. And for the biggest thing for all breweries is keg sales. That's a huge pain point for us. Keg sales are what we depend on. And when the country says, oh, stop, we're not pouring beer anymore, it's pretty intense for us. We are really fortunate that we have such a strong packaging following, and packaged beer, of course, still sells during a pandemic. But on the brewery side, it was kind of a blessing because it was our time to stop and go ahead and rebrand, which takes time. You have to get approval, the final artwork. I ran ours to make sure it was appropriate with our tribe. So during our time, I got a few new distributors, changed a few things. We almost rebranded everything. We're still short a couple things that we're working on. And we were able to develop our seltzer. We have a couple other beers that we're working on to release in the future. So that part, it's kind of been a blessing. It's given us time to redo tap handles and look at our partnerships and our strategic planning. On the tap room side, I can speak for every local restaurant, coffee shop, everything. Yeah. It's been a nightmare. It's been a nightmare in the fact that it seems like every week things were changing there for a while. And to have your staff have a mixed message constantly, that's pretty hurtful and it hurt our hearts. We tried to keep ours consistently, whether it was to go in, outside. I'm dealing with customers who don't understand that we're in a pandemic. You know, trying to get the right food for the tap room. So it's been interesting, but I'm glad that we're nearing the end of some normalcy. I've also relied on our other breweries. I know Six Rivers has really been there for us, and I hope we've been there for them as much as they've given to us. Even just having the support of, you're not going to believe what happened to me today, or can you believe this week? It's been intense, but it's brought us closer.
Yeah. What was, has the tap room stayed open for to go this whole time, or was there any full on closure? I'm not sure.
We shut down for 3 weeks, and that was pretty much it. We've been open, and it wasn't 7 days a week. We shut down for a deep cleaning, some training, and it was during the spike just to make sure that everyone was safe and not coming to work during that time. And also, we've taken it pretty seriously where we've had our staff quarantine if they've possibly come in contact. And that's really hard to run a business when everyone's constantly quarantining. So we had 3 weeks, and other than that, we've been open, and our things have changed constantly. Someone a few months ago said, when are you guys just going to be consistent? And I'm like, dude,
it's not on us.
Well,
man.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Wow. So, where has this person been? Where have you been?
yeah. So hopefully we're there. We have a great chef that I'm so fortunate to have. We have an amazing staff, and we're really excited to get back on track on the exciting new menus and options we have. So,
yeah.
The case Six Rivers and Eel River, and especially Mad River, you know, the brew house, the tap houses are such vibrant cultural centers. That's a spot right in Blue Lake that everyone wants to be. And so to have live music, you know, I know a lot of people that is one of their favorite places to play music. Is at Mad River. So I know are we back? Are we doing live music at all yet? Or is that still?
Yeah, we've had a couple of things. We're going to start consistently doing it in just a couple of weeks in May. We wanted to make sure we were at least in the orange tier and we were able to make plans and stick with them. But, you know, I think it's also important what you touch on through this crazy time. Mad River, Eel River, and Six Rivers, our tap rooms were sometimes one of the only places you could get food from. And I would have never thought that the brewery would have become a staple for food in the community where they're like, you can't close, there's nowhere else to go. And the same when I went to Fortuna, I knew I could at least get food from Eel River or Six Rivers from McKinleyville. So it's been an interesting time.
Yeah, well, cool. I think that's, yeah, that's pretty much all we had to talk about. But is there anything else that you think is interesting is going on in your life or in the brewery that you want to put out there? Anything going on with the tribe that you think people should know about or is worth discussion? Or
no, I think just continuing supporting us and the tribe. We are releasing the Condors this summer and fall. Yeah. That's just as proud a moment as the dams releasing. That's a sacred bird to us. So you won't be seeing that on a beer can, but okay. I'm really excited and I'm really proud of that. And I hope everyone goes up for the releasing and gets to see them in the sky again. It's a good time.
It does feel like a really exciting time for the tribes and for Native peoples. Like there seems like a lot of hope on the horizon.
Yeah, you know, during this time, we're very village-oriented people where we have to touch each other and hug and we're around each other constantly. So the pandemic was really difficult. It was a really dark time where we couldn't be around each other. And so we've had to do all these other different platforms to connect. And it's really made us closer together, and not just in our own tribes, but across the country. I really feel like Indian country is getting stronger together and putting that message out there. And it's a good time. It's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Linda Cooley, COO of Mad River Brewery. I'm sure you welcome everyone to drive out 299 to come hang out at the brewery. Mm-hmm. It's always 10 degrees warmer in Blue Lake. And
yes,
We are excited for the summer that's on your horizon. And thanks for taking the time to come in and do this weird thing with us.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for keeping the news out there. I appreciate you, and it's good to see you again.
You too. Yeah. Well, I'll try to not make it be another 30 years before we
have that conversation. Let's not put our age out there.
Okay. Well, I mean, 15 years ago when we were children.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's very nice to meet you, and thanks again. I can't wait to get out there to the brewery after River Days. Oh. We're all really looking forward to those River Days.
It's gonna be the best summer ever, Linda.
It's gonna be.
It will be. Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Bye. Okay, well, thank you so much to Linda Cooley, COO of Mad River Brewing Company, for chatting with us today, joining us on our humble little podcast. It was really great to learn more about the beer labeling and the meanings behind that.
This is a cool development, you know.
Yeah.
Humboldt County, one of the few places with a tribally owned brewery. I think that we can wear that as a badge of honor as a community.
Yeah. Now I'm gonna go get myself some of that undammed. And head to the river.
Yeah.
To
the Klamath.
Perhaps. Yeah. Do people go swimming much in the Klamath?
I was trying to think about that. Like, none of my river spots are the Klamath. I think that maybe the Klamath River spots are a little bit more protected, than the other rivers.
Well, I think that because of the damming of the Klamath River, you know, it's not known for being the cleanest and best, like, swimming river. So maybe this will change as well.
This is our goal, Stephanie, is this summer to find an exquisite river spot on the Klamath.
Okay. All right. I like that. That's a good goal. We should have asked Linda about that. She would have had a great suggestion.
I don't think she would have told us. Why would she tell us?
I'd love to know.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll find you this summer on the Klamath. Linda, watch out. And thank you for listening to Humble Holding Up. And we'll see y'all next week with, I don't know, probably someone local. All right.
Bye.